All right, here we are. Time again, May 3rd, 2024. Time for CommonSenseOhioShow.com. And, you know, why do I say CommonSenseOhioShow.com? Because that's where you can go check out all the latest and greatest and all the oldest and, can't think of another word to work, but all the old episodes for Common Sense Ohio Show. You can also subscribe, like, get to your podcast subscription places right there at CommonSenseOhioShow.com. We are brought to you day in and day out by Harper Plus Accounting. Finished my first quarter, got all my tax returns done with Glenn, been a guest on the show. Any issues with your accounting, they got it. They got you covered. And now they've got this, even, you know, I think they focus a lot on entrepreneurs and business owners, small, large, medium, whatever. But they've also got a new division dealing with your transactional stuff. So if you're thinking, well, I don't need an accountant, it's, you know, I don't need to pay all that for an accountant. They got you covered. You know, it's like a step above the guys with the signs flipping them around on the side of the road, trying to entice you in.
That's got to be the most best feeling to work with somebody like that. Yeah. Come on.
Like, that's who you want working your taxes. But anyway, apparently it's motorcycle helmet day because Norm has got his motorcycle helmet on.
National Wear a Helmet to Work Day.
Yeah. Well, did you ride your bike in?
No. It's supposed to rain today, so I didn't ride, but had my helmet on last night and for some test and tuning at Mid-Ohio. Anyway, it's wear your helmet to work, not wear your helmet while you're working. So right, I'll take it off.
Okay, take your headphones off too, there, buddy.
But they actually have a day for wearing a helmet.
Yeah, is it a Hallmark day? You buy a card for you helmet wearing SOBs. So, you know, before we dive into all the weighty news topics, and there are plenty, we do a World War II fact of the day. And, you know, the last couple of weeks, 3-4 weeks, I've gotten sort of heavy with it and found some stuff that I've linked up to current times. I'm just going to go trivia this week. On May 3rd, so there's a guy out there named Leonard Dawe, D-A-W-E. You ever heard of him?
No.
I hadn't either. But he worked for the Daily, or he was a professor in England back in World War II, around about May 3rd-ish. Before that, he had become the setter for the Daily Telegraph. I had to look up what the hell a setter was. A setter is somebody who creates crossword puzzles.
Oh really? I was going to say, I thought it was probably the type of
typesetting or something. That's what I thought too. But no, he was a guy who created crossword puzzles. Now, crossword puzzles apparently sort of emerged in the 20s out of the United States, and it caught on like wildfire everywhere. The Daily Telegraph, even the subscriptions went up when they started offering crossword puzzles. And this guy, Leonard Dawe, was a setter. He created great crossword puzzles.
Cool.
But on this day, my sources sometimes give me differing days. So it might be May 2, it might be May 4, but, you know, roundabout now.
Yeah.
And by the way, I was going to talk about the end of World War II, but because that's going to happen, we'll do that next week. But
okay.
Yeah.
Roundabout now, in 1944, emerged a series of crossword puzzles that the solutions were sword, Juno, Mulberry. what was the other one? Omaha.
Oh boy!
All right, and you know, you would say
in May before D-Day. How is this guy getting these?
These were the answers to the crossword. So it's like there was a clue that led you to those words.
Oh my God!
Reading it again, I'm getting. I didn't spend a whole.
The
lot
German
time.
High command should have been doing his crossword puzzle.
Right. So MI6 or whatever the Brit, you know, the spy people got involved, and they, you know, they grabbed the guy and they started interviewing him. They said, you know, it's like this mystery still to this day.
Yeah. How did he get those?
Did he get those things? He was eventually released and set back, and that was that. It is, and then in 19.
You're saying a crossword puzzle guy was arrested?
Yeah, well, I questioned.
Holy crap.
The guy who created it was like, well, how the hell do you know this? And what are you doing by disseminating this information? Is there some sort of Nazi spy intrigue going on?
Right.
It'd be a great movie. You know,
you could put
Tom Cruise at this guy or something.
Right.
You know, do something.
Yeah.
But anyway, they investigated. About 40 years later, 40 years, the 40-year anniversary of D-Day, somebody comes forward and says, well, I was this guy's student. And it turns out, this is what they think, how he would create crosswords by bringing his students in to say, give me some words. Like, here's the, you know, give me some words that match this grid or whatever.
Okay.
And then he would go backfill with clues.
Okay.
And the student said, yeah, I gave him words. And, you know, it turns out there was a military training camp right nearby the school, and the officers and the enlisted guys had less than tight lips about the stuff. And he claims that he heard some of these words and gave those to the professor, who then backfilled clues in.
Wow.
Whether that's true or not, who knows? It's still a mystery. And, you know, trying to read like the British rags on this, you know, they've got their little British quippy way to talk about it. But I never found that it was definitively established. But I think what people believe is that the students overheard soldiers talking about that and then backfilled it in.
Wow.
Or then he later backfilled it in with clues. So there you go. That was roundabout May 3rd, 1940.
Do you know,
1944.
Do you know what Juno even means? I don't even know what that word means.
It's a place in Alaska.
Well, you know,
the same way?
You know, no. J-U-N-O is how it's.
I don't know where it came from. Okay. Sword is obvious.
Which was one of the beaches.
Yeah. And, Juno, and, sword, Omaha.
It sounds like Greek mythology or something. J-U-N-O. Mm. Well, anyway.
Yeah. No, you're right.
No, we've got this thing right in front of us.
Exactly. I mean, it's just one of those irritating little factoids. I've never bothered looking
up.
And it is funny, Omaha Beach, right? So, like, there is no place in Nebraska that has a beach.
Right. That's true.
I don't know. Like, is Juno maybe like a Morse code? Like, you know, when you say J, it's Juno. I don't know.
Maybe a goddess, I think.
Ah, there you go. So it is like a mythological person.
Juno spacecraft.
All right, so here we go. Here we go. Hera, daughter of Cronus, and Rhea, mother of Zeus, was associated with all aspects of life.
Huh.
All aspects of the life of women. The goddess of women, marriage, and childbirth. She was known by the Romans as Juno.
Mm.
Homer gave Hera the epithet Oxeye because of her large, full eyes and described her as tall and striking.
And I'm guessing the Roman calendar picked up her name for the month of June.
Probably.
Yeah, probably. Probably.
All right. We all know a lot of stuff collectively, but we didn't know that.
Well,
so.
I mean, that's fascinating. Actually,
fascinating as it is, we should probably bump on.
Absolutely. Well, start off with some gaffe stuff. So Biden, he made a statement in some kind of foreign policy speech a couple days ago, and he remarked that Japan and India have racist.
Xenophobic, he called them.
Xenophobic.
Because they're not letting immigrants in, flooding their borders like we are.
Like we are. And so it's...
Well, hold on a second.
It's true about their immigration policy. Whether it's from xenophobia or not, I can't answer that. I don't know.
Well, but, who cares?
But Japan...
It's their country.
Yeah, Japan, right. I think... Now, this is a couple of years old, but Japan had only taken in, under refugee... status, four people.
Well, first of all, look how big Japan is.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't have the vast geographical area that we have.
They and India are jammed and with people.
Yeah, they got plenty of people already. Secondly, because they have plenty of people, as do we, right? So we don't need any more, at least not ones that are coming in illegally and not paying taxes and sucking off the government teat of benefits. Like, we don't need any more of that.
No.
So we should have every right to refuse it. And you know, there were some commentators saying, like, look at London, what's going on with that city.
Oh, yeah.
And some cities in Germany, same thing. I mean,
the Netherlands.
The Netherlands. And, you know, the Scandinavian countries are finally catching wise to this because they let this in. And, you know, they're a very homogenistic culture.
Wasn't it the great-great-grandson of Vincent van Gogh that was murdered in the Netherlands because he drew a cartoon of Muhammad?
Mm-hmm.
And a radical killed him, stabbed him to death in public.
So Biden with his nonsense, really what he's calling you folks, what he's calling us, what he's calling everybody, anybody who doesn't support open borders, illegal immigration. Yeah. I'm not saying immigration. I'm saying unlawful, illegal, wide open borders.
Right.
Come in and do what you please, you criminals, you people, whatever you are, for whatever purpose. Then you're xenophobic.
Right.
You're racist. Sure. If you don't. So it's the classic leftist
trope.
It's the
classic. Like
agree
if
with
you,
me or you're racist.
If you said all lives matter, including black lives, including any
you're
other.
You're racist.
You're a racist.
Racist.
Right.
Yeah.
So. And poking at your allies.
That's the thing.
Poking at your, I mean.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I just was like, is that the.
He's a moron of the highest order. And I will say it.
The Japanese emperor is probably going, what the fuck?
Well, prime minister.
You know, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
He's shaking his head. He's got to be shaking his head going, huh? Okay.
Like out of nowhere.
Right.
You're calling my culture or my country xenophobic.
Thanks, buddy. Yeah. Yeah.
Like you could talk behind the scenes.
Stick it up your ass and break it off. That's right. What I'd be saying.
Right. You know, like, could you take a few more refugees?
So, look, at the same time, we are, like, his I'm done.
Yeah. You know, it's like, yeah, it doesn't make sense.
The policies are so absurd right now, or lack of policies are so absurd.
They're absurd.
And to say that other people are xenophobic for not adopting our ridiculousness is ridiculous.
Yeah. Right. That's the point right there.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
He also gave a speech. I think yesterday he finally decided to speak about the college campus unrest, where the police are finding about 50% of the people being arrested in general or being apprehended and then let loose, that about 50% of the people are not students on that campus.
Yeah, they're professional protesters.
Exactly.
Agitators. Oh, really? I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, about half. It's about half. And he said, in his remarks, something that I guess you could say this is aspirational, but it should not turn into legislation, which the House passed this bill. So Biden said, you know, there's no room for hate speech. And as painful as it may be, yes, there is, Mr. President. Hate speech should be perfectly legal.
Man, doesn't it? It's like, I hate that word. I hate that word.
I hate that word, but
it makes me think of Orwell. So I remember reading 1984, and our kid, I don't think my sons had to read 1984, which is a telling problem with public education.
Oh, yeah, right.
But I had to read 1984, and there was all sorts of words like that, doublespeak and ministry of truth. And, you know, hate speech sounds like something very Orwellian, right out of 1984.
Because who decides what is hate?
That's right.
And there is nothing. So everybody knows I say, and I do mean, I love everybody, but that doesn't mean other people have to. So the people can hate me, and they can talk about how they hate me, and they can give us
hate.
Exactly.
What is hate?
Right.
So but this is important.
Yeah.
So hate isn't just hate. It isn't just name calling. It's morphed into you don't agree with me.
Exactly.
And think about how dangerous that is.
Right.
Because it's a hop, skip, and a jump from complete dismantling of the First Amendment. I mean, it really is the gateway to getting rid of free speech. This is hate speech. So all speech is free, except some speech is freer than others, back to Orwell, right? So it's like, all animals are created equal, except some are more equal than others. And who is the arbiter of that? Biden? That guy can't even read a freaking teleprompter without saying the word pause.
Well, I mentioned the House, so it's not a law yet, but the House passed a bill on Wednesday.
I got to finish. Like, this table is chock full of hate speech by their definitions.
Yeah, exactly.
For sure. Exactly.
And here's an example. Yeah. So they adopted the Holocaust Remembrance Alliance. That's a worldwide organization, to educate and remember and, you know, to mark the fact that there was a Holocaust, because there is Holocaust denial, and they're you know, contending against that, as well they should. So they have an adoption within that, they have adopted within that organization a definition, and it's long, a long definition of what anti-Semitism is. And one of the aspects included in the definition of anti-Semitism is a position denying the Jewish people of a right to self-determination, aka having a state of Israel. Okay. Now, I think there should be. So here's Norm Murdoch's opinion. So let's dispense with this so that you don't think I'm an anti-Semite. The Jews, both religious and culturally, should have the right to a state. They should have a right to self-determination. So there you go. So that makes me a Zionist, I guess. So the House passed a law adopting for enforcement that definition of anti-Semitism. And it goes right to what Steve just said. Whether it's the president or the Congress, the idea that we're going to define what is acceptable speech.
To what end are we doing this?
I mean, this is
right.
This
right.
is the slippery slope
so
right here.
It doesn't make it any better.
Steve, it passed 320 to 91. Go ahead.
And it doesn't make it any better that it's defining anti-Semitism, because that happens to be speech that you want to support right now, or the speech you want to tamp down.
Right.
It doesn't make it any better. All this speech is free. All this speech is
exactly
is permitted. And the only remedy for it is more.
Yes.
More.
Right. Right.
So I should be able to say any anti-Semitic trope I want to say.
That's right.
And I should be able to say it on this table, at this table, on this podcast. And I don't give a flying rat's behind what the definition of anti-Semitism is.
Right.
I should be able to say it. Am I going to? No, of course not. And I don't use, I try not to use offensive epithets, language to anybody.
Epithets. Yeah.
But I should be able to, right?
Absolutely.
Those are two different things. Now the question is, what are we undergirding all of this with? It should be some common sense of right and wrong, some common sense of morality in our society.
Right.
And we don't have it right now. And it doesn't mean that the government can backfill that with laws like this.
Yeah.
I find it stupid.
Yeah.
You know, what is anti-Semitic? I don't know. And I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I'm not going to go criticize. I'm not going to say offensive things to Jewish people. And I'm not going to say offensive things to Muslim people. I'm going to disagree with both at some time or another.
Sure.
And if you find that offensive, shove it up your ass.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Well said. And I think we touched on this in the previous show. And it never occurred to me that the House of Representatives would pass such a law So I don't know. Chuck Schumer said in the Senate he's not sure what he's going to do with this. But I could see the Senate passing it. I could see Biden signing
it. It's just political nonsense.
It's ridiculous.
Because if you're defining anti-Semitism, that means at some juncture, to what end you have to ask, some juncture—
They'll make it illegal.
It'll make it illegal.
That's right.
Because why else would you need a definition
for this? Why else would you need a definition?
Correct.
Yeah, it's stupid. Yeah. It's political nonsense. Yeah. So—
Well—
Let's talk. I got to talk about this.
Go ahead.
It's bubble gum. Again, it's sort of bubble gum.
Yeah.
But it's underlined with some interesting stuff.
Yeah.
So the college campus debacles.
Yeah, while we're on that. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
If you go check out GoFundMe, Phi Kappa, Phi Kappa Phi men defended their flag, throw them a rager, is this GoFundMe account. It is up to $516,672. So what happens is these guys, I think the University of North Carolina, am I right on that? Yeah. These fraternity guys.
Yeah.
So the protesters removed the United States flag from the public campus, took it down, put up the Palestine flag. The school finally got some courage and went and pulled down the Palestine flag and put up the American flag. And as soon as they left, of course, the protesters went back to take it down. Well, this group of fraternity kids from Phi Kappa, whatever they are, came and protected the flag. And prevented it from hitting the ground and did all this. Well, somebody saw this on TV because, of course, social media and viral. It went viral.
Yeah, it didn't happen unless it's on video.
That's right.
That's our culture.
The GoFundMe, throw them a rager. So somebody, not even a brother or a member of this fraternity, decided somebody needs something. I mean, they deserve something. Let's throw them a rager. So now it's up to like $516,672.
Oh, my God. Wow.
That's how much the GoFundMe is. So anybody wants to check that out and go fund them. And, you know, they sang the Star Spangled Banner, et cetera. So this is an interesting, underlying this is interesting. So why is it controversial to take down the United States flag? Fly the United States flag at a public funded university.
Right. Crazy.
You know, where are we in this country where you can't even salute the flag?
Well, it's like that Texas boy that temporarily was, suspended in high school for wearing, all he did was he wore a T-shirt that had the American flag on it. And they said that's a hate speech.
Unbelievable.
State. I mean.
Well, there's a case called Tinker versus Des Moines Independent School District, I think. Back in the Vietnam era, they were wearing black armbands or something, and it was a black kid and he was punished for that. And the U.S. Supreme Court finally rules, and the quote was something along the lines of, "Kids do not check their constitutional rights at the schoolhouse door when they enter a public school,
especially in a garment." Yeah, I do love these frat boys. So it's like, this will piss off all the Marines, but It's kind of like the frat boy version of Mount Suribachi.
Yeah, I mean, they had their moment.
Yeah. They had their
moment. Right.
Yeah, they had their moment.
Because I saw the picture, and there are flagpoles in the background, and they're all huddled around the base of it. Yeah. And I'm thinking, my God, you know, World War II, we had the Marines putting up the flag.
There's some respect to be had to any country's flag. You know, them taking down the Palestine flag, hopefully they were respectful of it.
Yeah. I'm sure they were not.
Probably not. I understand the moment.
Like
not
at Columbia,
to I told,
when,
I understand.
When the cops took down the Palestinian flag, they put it on the ground.
Did they?
Yeah. Oh, and they raised the American flag. Yeah. And Mayor Adams.
Mayor Adams,
who is turning into a Republican, said some really strong things. He said 18%. This is from Mayor Adams' speech yesterday. Mayor of New York City. He is really on this flag thing. And as you know, he's an ex-transit policeman. He said only 18% of American youth think that this is a good country, which leaves 82% do not think it's a good country.
And
he says,
it's insanity.
He said, so this is the Democrat
mayor of
New York.
I hope that number's wrong.
No, I
hope it's
right.
He said, we've got to quit this kind of education. We've got to quit this mind screwing of our youth where they think this is a bad place.
Is Palestine better?
And he said,
well, exactly.
Brett, he said it in context with these students putting up the Palestinian flag. He's like, what are they doing?
Right. Well, oh, no, I agree. I don't agree with them putting a Palestine flag up at all. I don't agree with that. I think respect.
But it's a middle finger to America.
That's why.
It was like when they put up the North Vietnamese flag or the Viet Cong flag during the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
It wasn't really that they're supporting the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese. It was more or less to say, hey, America, F you.
The common thread is these people hate America.
That's right.
And they live here. They are it's like our founders, your father, your grandfather, his grandfather, all the way going back, planted this huge oak tree, a seed that has now become this huge oak tree with all these limbs.
Yes.
And these limbs create a nice, comfortable place for us to sit. And these morons are taking out their saws and cutting off the limbs.
Right.
They don't understand what they're doing.
Right.
Because once it's gone, it's gone. There is no freer place on the planet than the United States of America, and there never will be again if we let this go.
Yeah.
And you know, when we're obviously coming up on the anniversary of the Kent State shootings, wearing the hat.
Very similar.
But it's that, to what, are you wanting another Kent State situation? Do you want another one? Do you want to live in infamy like that?
And it's
because you're not going to, not necessarily pushing it to that degree, but it's that what do you want? Because the universities cannot divest of this money. They can't.
No, they can't.
It cannot happen. And I understand their point. I get that they can, but
they won't. So here's what's interesting about this is that I was born in May 5th, 1970. On that day, I think there were tanks on Lane Avenue and Woody Hayes was out there trying to call off the protesters and do with all this stuff. But you have to ask how it got that far.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and look, I think Florida, I don't know who it was or what school it was down in Florida said it best. It's like, we're not running a freaking daycare here.
Yeah.
Like, just because you're enrolled in our colleges doesn't mean you get to go run amok, take over our streets and take over our college buildings and impede the education of everybody else who's here trying to get an education.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what we signed up for. That's not what you signed up for. I don't give a flying rat's ass how much you paid me to be here.
Right.
You don't have that right. Columbia and these universities have permitted it to get to this spot where there is no choice except to send the cops in and do this. So if they had just shut it down, ab initio, right from the start,
right,
then it wouldn't have happened. It's sort of like they have created and you have to ask, if this isn't rocket science, right? I'm not a genius.
No.
So they did it on purpose. It's like on some level, these universities agree with these protesters and they let it go because they don't want to, or they're so scared of them that they don't want to be the ones that say blah, blah,
blah.
Well,
Steve, what district, was it in Portland or Seattle that had that district called Chaz?
Yeah, it was during the BLM riots.
Yeah.
And it went to hell like overnight.
And then they burned down or they occupied a police station.
They burned down.
They tried to burn down a federal courthouse.
Right. It's criminal.
Yeah.
You can't permit this stuff.
No.
So Brett, your point's good. Yeah. Now, so you have to ask and, you know, Ben Shapiro over at the Daily Wire, I agree with him on a lot of stuff and some stuff I don't, but he had an interesting take on this.
He's a smart guy.
He had a very interesting take on this. We are basically subsidizing our our universities, both public and private.
Oh, we are.
By guaranteed student loans. Right. So it's like we are subsidizing them.
Amongst a whole host of other things, grants,
irrespective
all kinds.
Of irrespective
yeah.
of that.
Yeah.
We are subsidizing
absolutely.
These schools.
Right.
And you know, when you look at it that way, when you look at student loans as a subsidy.
That's right. And it is.
And it is. It's a very interesting angle that I hadn't considered. I hate student loans and we're bitching about them and they want to pay them all and they want to forgive them all, but yet they're still lending, you know.
Yeah,
like
right.
Like you're talking
right.
about the scourge right, yeah. of what it is, but the government's still backing student loans. Like colleges have created these complete nonsense programs and buildings and degrees
right.
because the government's paying for it.
You can major in Star Trek.
It's so
like,
stupid.
What?
It's so dumb.
You're majoring in Captain
Kirk. Can you
Kirk?
Imagine? and you know, can you imagine like if you're a lender?
Yeah.
Like, or even my own son. So if I had to pay for my son's education, he comes to me and says, I'm going to go to Columbia and it's going to cost $100,000 a year.
Yeah.
And I'm going to major in Star Trek or, or, you know, some sort of
basket weaving
art, you know, like Marxist art in the 20th century or some other nonsense. I'd be like, yeah, no freaking way.
Yeah, I'm not funding
you pay
that.
For that. I'm
yeah,
not going to pay
right.
for
that's
that.
That's right.
You yeah. wouldn't pay for it because
no.
there's no return on the money.
Right. No.
Yet the government is.
Right.
And you know, it's interesting to your point of universities kind of silently backing this, you know, but talk, I may be a day late and a dollar short on this, but we'd think the simple solution to this would be you expel the students that don't leave.
Yes.
Then all of a sudden they're trespassing.
Yes.
And they're done.
Right.
We're done.
You have committed burglary. And trespassing.
You're done.
Yeah, bye-bye.
If you don't want to be here and you don't want the tuition money going to Israel, as you say, then leave.
Kindly get the F out.
Right.
Did you see
you can solve the problem. I
right.
mean, again, if it goes that far.
Did you
know,
see where?
My son came home in my house and took over my bedroom with his buddies
yeah.
saying, I want more I want
we're gonna
more
occupy
gas money
Steve.
And you have yeah. to buy me another yeah. car and yeah. you have to do this and I don't like where you're spending your right. money, Dad. Yeah. It'd be like, yeah, no. You got 10 seconds.
Right.
And then I'm kicking ass.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. right.
It's like, get out.
You gotta turn the dog loose.
That's
and,
right.
And I do like that we allow universities to be the place to voice your opinion. I get it. But
well, that's what it should
but
be.
We're going too well, far with this.
Hold on. I heard some commentary on this, too. Why do we think that?
Well, more no. tradition than anything else, probably.
That's right.
But when did the tradition start?
Because... Actually, back in the 1700s.
Well, not to voice your opinion.
Oh, well, true. That's so, a good point. They were actually stating essays and theses.
You were supposed to go
point.
To university to learn.
Yeah.
yeah.
Like,
true.
When did it become a place
true.
for kids to go scream whatever their whim is
right.
about whatever their whim?
It's
like...
It's evolved. You're right.
It No. I'm yeah. not criticizing you for this yeah. because somebody made this point and my light bulb went on. I was like... You know, that's interesting. So we think that students should go have these free speech rights and all this crap. It's like, who says so? Like, you paid to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't pay to go rampage on the streets and picket and protest.
Well, Steve.
It's bullshit.
We've kind of lost that opportunity to do it on the courthouse lawn. Because you've brought this up, too, that you do the soapbox deal.
Yeah.
In the early
people
years
used to go
of our,
and just,
yeah,
talk,
just
talk. And you
really
still could.
Do you guys not find it rather... hypocritical that all of a sudden the left is real worried about free speech rights on campus
right.
after banning yeah. all the conservative voices and canceling events
arresting
and
allowing
yeah. people to protest, you know, whether it's Ann Coulter or Tucker Carlson mm-hmm. or whoever, and then they're not allowed to speak. All of a sudden now the left you got to let these Hamas
this
people
is the
speak.
Problem when
well,
you have
they're picking
no
which kinds
standard.
Of speech.
When your standard is relative, this is what happens.
That's right.
Well, and I'm glad
instead of absolute.
Yes.
And I'm glad you shed light on the professional protesters
yeah.
that are there.
Oh yeah,
that's enlightening. And
absolutely.
And I should have put two and two together before you even said that.
Well, they take
it's
off
its own industry.
They take off
I'm
their
sure.
helmet or their hat. It's bald guys
yeah,
in
like
their
35
40s.
Years
yeah.
old. And,
yeah,
you know, okay. they show their arrest records all over the country. Yeah. If
they're
going,
wearing yeah. pink leotards.
But it's the same thing that happened in the 60s.
Yeah,
you know this happened in Colombia in the 60s. I mean. It's the same crap.
And in fact, the USSR back then, the Soviet Union, was funding those
yes.
campus unrests.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's come out now that they actually...
It was their plan.
...had Soviet cells in the United States that were printing up the banners and
so
supplying
if you create,
the infrastructure.
If you create unrest, if yeah. you create chaos, if you create a... Like, if you educate kids to the point where they think the United States is a bad place,
right,
and you have no moral standards anywhere, then you can dismantle a country.
Well, and today we
and that's
have
what's happening.
We have these Confucian centers on campus that are funded by the Chinese
right.
government.
It sounds great.
Confucius, it's the same thing right, as the Soviets
a great thinker,
were doing.
Norm.
Right.
Except it's a Marxist communist right. Educational plot. Yeah.
And now they're calling for campuses to oust the Hillel affiliated offices that are on a lot of campuses, which is for Jewish students, you know, or people who want to learn about Judaism. It's an office, a building, a club, or whatever for them, and they want those kicked off campus.
Well, that's because my daughter got to take advantage of that. We're not Jewish, but you know, to go to Israel over a winter break.
Yes.
Through Hillel.
Exactly.
When she went to Kent State,
it's educational.
And, yeah, for sure.
Sure.
It was very educational. Now that she can see. Looking back, going, oh my God, I was there. I was, you know, those sorts of things.
It's not just stories in a Bible anymore.
Exactly.
It's actually stuff that you can see and feel, and
or
it's
how,
still there.
How they interacted with each other. It's that, no, we couldn't go there because those two hate each other. I mean, that literally happened.
So we've kicked out military recruitments off campus, right? That recruiters, you know. Now they want to get rid of Hillel. They, you know, you can't have any kind of Christian anything. You can't have any conservative anything. But Hamas, they want free speech rights for them.
Yes. I mean, so, exactly. And now we're creating laws so they can't have free speech rights. It's like, this is so insane. All you have
Did
to do.
Did you see Iran is offering scholarships for anybody who lost their... who got expelled? You can go to Iran. I want to see.
I'm sure the
LGBTQ people.
I'm sure they're going to be all the gay people are going to be flooding into Iran
and flying off the top of buildings.
Yes, wearing their rainbow capes.
Oh, that's
right. You go wear that crap over there and see what happens. Now, I can't speak from any authority because I haven't been there, but I've got a hunch.
It's a theocracy state. I mean,
you don't agree, then you got a problem. Right. So, look.
I mean, at least Israel, right, is a secular state in terms of, like, they have Palestinians in their armed forces. That Israel, being mainly Jewish, okay, it's not a religious state.
Right.
It is a secular state. Iran is a theocracy.
Yeah. They have Palestinians in their army?
Absolutely. Yeah. Do you know our friend that runs the Nazareth Deli here in Columbus? He's an Israeli citizen. He's Palestinian.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And there's lots of them.
Well, that's great.
And he loves,
that's good.
And he
that's
loves good. Israel.
Yeah. Okay, that's good. I mentioned earlier, too, if you really do want a good snapshot of what happened on May 4th in 70 at Kent State. First, go visit it.
Yeah.
You can visit the memorial because it gives you a history of the day before, the day of, and protests and shootings that happened at other campuses weeks after, too. So it's enlightening. But it also, and this is the conspiracy theorist person, and I'm not a conspiracy person at all, necessarily, but you kind of sit there and you kind of go, there were a lot of film cameras that day going on.
Yeah.
Because they captured a lot of stuff. And I know once you put the pieces together, the day before, the kids just beat the hell out of Kent. They burned some stuff down.
And they did occupy buildings.
They knew something was going on. And there were a lot of kids. And we're talking at that time. Remember, 1970, it's film cameras, not cell phones.
Right.
There are a lot of cameras going on at that point in time, or film cameras going
Again,
on, capturing
this
a lot
idea
of
professional
stuff.
Professional agitators.
There was something going on.
That was going on.
But I'm glad, though, looking back, it's good it was captured.
It's good.
Really, thank God
but
it was.
History's not telling the tale exactly. Sort of like this. Like, where are you going to start your tale of history? When the police are going into the Columbia buildings, or when the university permitted it to go on for a month?
Right.
To the point where there were tent encampments and people taking over and impeding kids from going to their classes. It's like it should have stopped immediately. Mm-hmm. And then this wouldn't have happened. And these kids have the gall to say they need humanitarian aid after they've taken over a building. Did you see this?
Yeah. Like Northwestern totally caved in.
It's like these kids are saying we need humanitarian aid, like hot food.
Oh, my
God.
Right, it's like if anybody who caves to this nonsense, you get what you deserve.
Yeah, so Northwestern took the opposite, near Chicago, took the opposite tact that the University of North Carolina, UCLA, and lately Columbia, they dispersed they gave the Hamas protesters everything they wanted. So anybody arrested, anybody suspended, expelled, whatever, they're reversing all of that. And they agreed to a bunch of new programs and it basically caved in.
Yeah.
And it's just like, okay, so
here we go.
It works.
It'd be interesting to see where the parents' role is in
violence
this. In regards to holding parents accountable for any damage, anything going on, because you know those kids aren't necessarily paying for their own education. It's mom and dad.
Yeah. Well, oh, my child would never do that.
Yeah.
Well, and it's to cede the field to any of these demands, which are absurd on their face.
Right.
Right. They're absurd.
Right.
It just reflects what the university's motives are, because there's no you wouldn't say yes to this unless you agreed with the protesters.
Like, right.
You agreed with the
students.
It certainly
looks that way, doesn't it? It comes off that way.
Yeah.
It does. It.
It's like you wouldn't.
The faculty formed perimeter lines at several of these protests where the faculty locked arms to try to keep the police from going in.
Right.
So the faculty's on board.
Fire them all.
Yeah.
If I'm in charge, you're all fired.
Yeah.
Like imagine if this were your business and your employees are out there helping to impede your ability to do business. And not only that, like you to impede your ability to serve customers who have paid you for your service.
Yeah.
So if I had employees upstairs in my law firm and they decided that they're going to barricade the front of my building because they don't agree with some policy or practice I have, say with COVID, and I've got clients coming and going that I can't help because of it, you're all effing fired.
Yeah.
Guess what?
Right.
You're fired. There's no severance. Yeah. There's no nothing.
Yeah.
You're a traitor. Bye-bye. You're fired.
Yeah. And those contracts that the university has with
the AAUP.
I can't imagine anything's covered in this in regards to legal ways of firing people.
Yeah, I don't.
Of teachers.
So
and professors.
A tenured professor.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I don't know.
That should be a violation.
I would
of
think
their
of a
contract.
Tenured professor is in conspiracy to commit burglary, trespass, and other crimes that are impeding the university's business, then you should be fired.
It goes beyond First Amendment, because I'm looking at that First Amendment piece. And it's like, but it goes beyond that because you're impeding business, basically.
Yeah, this is crime.
Yeah.
You're committing
crimes. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a crime to take over a building and not prevent others to come. It's a crime.
That's right.
It's called burglary or trespass, depending on how you want to define it.
Right.
But it's a crime.
Yep.
And if you're a professor.
It's so interesting if the Curtin students would sue the other students.
Well, you'd sue the university and the other students. Yes, you absolutely.
I paid to be here to take a test. Yes, I may agree with what you guys are saying on the lawn, but
I'm not getting what I paid for.
That's not why I'm here. I'm going to protest in another way, but you're impeding my way to take my finals, to get the hell out of here and graduate to my job.
Yeah.
I'm suing you.
If I am a
kid, that would be so interesting.
If my son up at Bowling Green was unable to walk for graduation or unable to get to his finals or his education were impeded, I would seriously consider suing
Bowling
Green.
That would be such an interesting case.
Yeah. The campus staff, there were, I think, three janitors that were effectively kidnapped at Columbia.
All right, so now you have...
They were entrapped. They were not allowed to leave the floor.
That's not effectively kidnapping. That is kidnapping.
That's kidnapping.
Exactly. So, you know, is Biden going to send the FBI?
Of course not.
You know, come on, guys.
Of course not. Of course not.
But parents that go to a school board meeting and rant a little bit, they're domestic terrorists.
Yeah, they're domestic terrorists.
Right.
These people taking over our public building and impeding public business.
That's terrorism.
And let alone the private universities.
Yeah, the janitors came out and said, yes, they were holding us. We were not permitted to leave.
Yeah, and so just to put in perspective in Ohio what kidnapping is, that's kidnapping.
Yes.
And it's a felony of the first degree, carries with it a maximum possible punishment of 11 years in prison.
How did they stop them from leaving then?
Threat of violence.
Yeah, force or threat of force.
Wow.
Eventually they relented, but for several hours they were not allowed to leave.
And we've had this going on right here in Columbus. So the Ohio State protesters, I mean, a lot of those guys were arrested. Those protesters were arrested.
Yeah.
And then I went to court on Monday, I think, is when they were all coming through.
They wanted arrest. I saw a
of course
couple
they
of video.
Did. Yeah.
They were taunting him on video.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, they're going to get arrested today. Did we do enough?
Yeah.
You're messing with the superintendent of Annapolis. I don't think he's going to tolerate
He's not going to tolerate. And he shouldn't.
Yeah,
and
no,
he
no.
shouldn't. Because
yeah.
we, they, look, I got my own theories on public universities. I mean, there's some pros and cons there.
Yeah.
But you've got kids who have paid to get an education, and these people are preventing the kids from getting an education.
Yeah.
A small minority of them are preventing the majority from getting.
Because most of the kids, I talked to my son. He's like, look, we don't care about any of this crap. We just want to. They just want to,
you know,
get their education and get out of this.
Getting back to Ben Shapiro's comment that you brought up, the other pernicious aspect of these federal backing of student loans is it has facilitated the hyperinflationary increases in tuition.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, all it is a promissory note and Uncle Joe is saying he's going to make that go away.
Right.
So I don't care what you charge me for this service.
I'll pay it. Yeah, because
I'll pay. It could be $1 million a year. When they're talking about is going to wipe the slate clean.
The government always does this. I mean, they create a bad policy. It results in bad outcomes.
That's right.
And then they blame everyone else.
That's right.
For the outcome, not them.
Nobel.
It's the university's fault for overcharging for education, even though we were subsidizing it and letting them do it. So
that's right. Nobel laureate Milton Friedman and you know, Thomas Sowell, these guys, they always say you get more of what you subsidize. You always get more of what you pay for. So if you're going to subsidize student loans, people who otherwise maybe shouldn't go to college because they really don't want a degree. They want the lifestyle.
Right.
You know, they just it's a 4-year vacation.
Free.
You get out of high school. You don't really have to get a job. Then you can go to college and kind of float around, have fun, do keggers, you know,
and then come out and bitch about $200,000 worth debt for like a, you know, a history degree that you can't get a job.
While your blue collar classmate is busting his ass at a dealership doing diesel work or whatever that or putting roofs on houses or whatever the hell he's doing.
Yep.
You know, they're in the real world. Some of these college kids are just deferring their adulthood.
And
for
one of my
favorite
years. Thomas Sowell quotes is these bad policies are never judged on their outcome.
No.
Only their intent.
Only their intent.
And by the time the outcome has manifested, the people who push the policies are long gone.
That's right.
You know, it's like,
well, that's how we got the subprime crisis on housing.
Right. It's like,
everybody deserves a house.
Right. So
if you can
racist banks not lending to people and
if you can fog a mirror, we'll give you a mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then what were you expecting? Right. They can't pay the loan back.
Yeah. Thomas Sowell wrote a great book on that, The Housing Boom and Bust. It is one of the most insightful, thin little read. You know, it's only, you know, you can be done in a couple hours.
Yeah.
And I buzzed through it as fast as I could. It was absolutely fascinating.
Yeah.
And all fact, all of it, based on facts and studies.
So talk a little bit, if we can, about this Title IX redefinition of protected people. It used to be based on the two sexes, male, female. So Biden's administration, we talked about this last week, has decided to define those who think that they're the other gender, whether they've physically converted or not. If a male identifies and thinks he's a female or purports he's a female, he's now protected under Title IX. And Yost and 25 other states, Dave Yost, our AG, there's 26 states now that have formed a coalition to sue the administration over that rule change.
Well, this warrants a little bit of discussion.
That's more than half of the state.
Title IX, Title VII, I mean, these civil rights type legislative acts, you have to sort of put this in perspective. If the government is telling me that I, in my personal business, am not allowed to discriminate, you are impeding my freedom, right? And I'm not saying I disagree with the fact that I shouldn't discriminate, but it's sort of like the free speech. You're impeding my freedom. It's almost patently unconstitutional.
Yeah.
I've always struggled with this since I learned about this in law school. I took an employment Title VII type class. You know, in your third year, you take these electives.
Right.
And it always bugs me because, you know, after you take constitutional law, you realize all these freedoms that we have. And then you see this Title VII and Title IX telling us what we can and can't do in our personal lives. And it's if not, you can be prosecuted. You can be sued. You can be not prosecuted, but sued. And it is a violation of my freedom to choose who I hire at my workplace.
Right, right.
And, you know, and
fire too.
And fire. So, and I have to justify firing somebody of a certain race or skin color because I'd be worried about getting sued. So it's like on its face, it sounds good.
Yeah.
But it's troubling. It's a little troubling, you know, do I want to have a female worker? Do I want to have a male worker? Do I want to have a black worker, a white worker, whatever it is? It's like on the face of it, we should be able to choose that. And then how would you prevent discrimination? Well, you know, the market will do that, because if I am stupid enough to say I'm not going to hire any women and I'm not going to hire any black people and I'm not going to hire any Asians and I'm not going to hire any Jews, well, then somebody else will.
Right? That's right.
Well, you look at the auto dealership.
And you'll get called out on it.
Yeah. You look at the auto dealerships. They finally realized that women like to buy cars from women.
Mm-hmm. And guess what? There they are.
There they are. Mm-hmm. Right.
I like buying cars from women, quite frankly.
Yeah.
I just do, because I'd rather deal with women buying a car.
Well, the CEO of General Motors.
You know, I just see the difference in it. I don't know why. Yeah. Just that's my preference. But it's that it allowed itself to happen, but we didn't have any dictatorship of, you must have three females on the floor.
Yeah.
The market fixed it.
The market fixed it. Now,
well, the head of General Motors for like the last 10 years has been a female.
Yeah.
The CEO.
And I hope she's good at the job. It sounds like
exactly
she is, right.
Exactly.
Yeah. So back to where we started here. Then, so you have these titles, and then think about this, Biden, now, not Congress,
right,
not the Senate, not the House.
They didn't modify Title IX. He did.
They didn't change anything. Biden said, "I'm going to redefine through executive administrative action."
Yeah.
What this means. Think about that. So what you did yesterday was not against the law. What you did today is against the law.
Right.
This is what I have been harping on for the last 5 years. The administrative state is a dictatorship in the making.
So he came down on the side of Leah Thomas. Yeah. You know, the guy who still has his package that's swimming against, or did till he graduated, but was swimming.
Sure.
He now wants to be in the Olympics and compete internationally.
Oh, I'm sure.
As a female.
Why not go get a medal?
It's unreal.
Right. It's nonsense.
What if LeBron just rolls out of bed this morning and says, I'm a chick. I'm going to go into the WNBA.
I want to play on the Indiana Pacers.
Yeah.
I want to play up against Caitlin.
I mean, he could just.
Exactly.
Right.
It would be 400-0. I mean, just drop the ball in.
Right.
Yeah.
But more troubling for me is the executive authority to modify rules this way.
Yes.
And get away with it. And basically create criminals overnight. It's been happening in the Second Amendment arena and the ATF.
Well, let's go to that. That's actually on my list.
Okay,
and Steve, I'm glad. Can you address that? The head of the ATF said, in theory, selling one gun privately could classify you as a dealer.
Yeah, there is.
You have got to be.
There's an interpretation of the regulatory scheme that wants to redefine who's a dealer and who's not. So I don't want to go into the nuance. We did a munitions podcast on this at one point, but it has to do with you're selling guns for profit. Maybe oversimplify it that way. Well, that's almost everybody. And why does it matter? First of all, because if you're selling a gun for profit, I sell you my gun, Norm, and say it's now worth $200 more than I paid for it.
Right.
Well, I'm selling it to you for a profit. Like, I wouldn't sell it to you for less.
Well, if you have a Rembrandt and you got it from your dad.
Does that make
me
a dealer?
And you sell it to me for $500,000.
Now, does that make me a dealer?
Yeah.
And why do I care if I'm a dealer? Because if I'm a dealer, now I got to go do my forms. I got to get an FFL.
FFL.
And I've got to get an official transfer.
Federal,
and I've got a federal firearms license. I have to go through an FFL, a licensed federal agent, to make the transfer of the gun, who's then going to take down all sorts of information that they're going to promise never to use.
And so, they have the right to do surprise.
Right.
Raids.
So if you have an FFL if you have an FFL, you sort of agree to open your doors to inspection.
On demand.
Of your books. But more important, it prevents private sales of firearms. So, and you would ask why we care about private sales of firearms. Well, they're going to say because of crime. And I'm going to say, well, look.
No
criminal is going to follow these rules anyway.
Right.
So forget about that. It's not going to prevent any crime. They're not even going to know about this rule because they're not going to care.
You're doing
it because you want to create a registration list for guns, and it's just another regulatory scheme to ban guns. And it's there's this idea of incrementalism, and it works both sides. You have to take away somebody's rights incrementally. It's like the frog in the pot. You have to turn up the water slowly.
Right.
And because it happens almost imperceptibly at that point.
That's
you
right.
You get to the point where you're like, wait a minute, what's happened?
Just one more little change.
It's like the end, back to Animal Farm. It's like the end of Animal Farm when they all of a sudden look a little bit like the humans. You know,
so connect the dots in regards to how, I'm not disbelieving you, but how, connect those dots where it could go. Because we say that a lot, and I totally agree, but some people don't have the imagination to go there. You know what I mean?
Basically,
if you can.
So Grandpa kicks off, and he's got, you know, he dies, and he leaves a Luger to his nephew, right? A war trophy that he picked up off the battlefield. Now the young man has a Luger. He doesn't want it, and he goes to a gun show, right?
And sells it.
And legally sells it to another Ohioan. Right.
At the gun show, not a dealer, just another person.
You know, because he doesn't.
Or he just knows you because you collect and he sells it to you.
And he sells it to me or however, or the next door neighbor.
He's now a criminal.
He's now a criminal under this interpretation. Right.
So he would now be required to go through an FFL. And, you know, where does that go? Well, it gives the government more intrusion into our personal lives. And it goes nowhere if you accept the premise that the government can never be corrupt and take advantage of things or has a different agenda to do things like ban firearms. Because once they ban firearms, they have to know where they are. And in order to know where they are, they got to get them all on paper somewhere and track down names and addresses. And then you have to wonder, all right, so if you know, Buford Pusser knocks on my door and says, I need you, you're registered for a gun. And I say, no, I don't have that anymore. Well, our paperwork doesn't show that you ever sold it. We'd like to come in and start looking around for it.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's these people that would say, I've heard, and this is on the right, people on the right say this, you know, the law and order folks. Well, I'd let them in to go search whatever they wanted.
I've got nothing to hide.
I got nothing to hide.
It's the dumbest response.
You don't understand.
Yeah.
What if they're corrupt?
That's right.
What if they're corrupt? And if you think that doesn't happen, come follow me for about 6 months.
Right. And you dropped a little baggie of white stuff.
Yeah. We got the
that, mister?
Well, we know of cases where no crime was ever charged, but they have taken evidence out of somebody's house, like cash, like $30,000
all the time,
and it's in a baggie down at the sheriff's, you know, holding storage room.
I have a client whose phone is in the storage department right now. It's like I can't get it out.
Yeah,
and they think they're entitled. Look, anytime the government seizes cash or guns, it's like get out of their cold dead hands. Are you getting that back?
Right.
Okay. No, I think it's a good example. I think playing this out is perfect to allow people to kind of think about, I can go there.
So you have to think, and it's not that, I've had to think about that too. It's a good question because it's the same question that our founders answered when they said, we're going to have something called the Fourth Amendment.
Yeah.
Like, why did they care whether the government had a warrant to come into your house? Like, if you wanted to create a society that was completely crime-free, you would just disband the Constitution and put the jackboots on the ground and take control, except that itself is corrupt and that itself is criminal.
Right.
You have to create a check on the governmental action because government is made up of humans, and humans, we all know, at least we all believe at this table, are imperfect. Though created in the image of God, we are vested with original sin and imperfection, and we all want to do better, but we all succumb to it sooner or later. And just because you work for the government, you don't get cloaked with some sort of immunity from that.
Yeah, and you know, human beings often have axes to grind, and
or we just have a bad day.
You just have, right, you have a bad day.
Seriously, you know, it's as simple as that.
Say local Sheriff Bob doesn't like you because you married his cousin, and his cousin, you know, it's like whatever. You don't think that person's going to
happen.
You don't think that person's got an axe to grind?
Does. Oh, my God,
You bet.
Let me roll out this. This is a great little fact scenario. So last fall, the Elyria, Ohio Police Department responded to a young lady's call. She had broken up with her boyfriend that she was cohabitating with, his house. He was renting the apartment, if you will, the residence. And she had turned in her key to the landlord and said, okay, I'm moved out. And then she remembered, I have some meds at the house. I'd like to go get them. Well, she went back to the house, knocked on the door. The boyfriend said, get the hell out of here. I don't want anything to do. You're not allowed to come in here anymore. It's my residence. You moved out. You left. You turned in the key. So she calls the police. Five Elyria policemen showed up, And they told her, listen, we don't have any reason to kick this guy's door down, but you can. So the police coached her to kick the door in. They kicked the door in. The police then got in a stack. Like, now, these are inexperienced police. Like,
clearly, they didn't know what the hell they were
they
doing.
They didn't know what to. So they got into this. They got into the SWAT stack. Like, so they get into a line, and one of them goes right up. So the boyfriend's like up at the top of the landing, at the top of the stairs in his underwear, like where the bedroom is. And he goes, what the hell are you doing in here? And they, the police go in after the girlfriend. So she goes and gets the drugs or her medications. And one of the policemen charges right up the steps behind her to accost this guy at the top of the landing. And the guy at the top of the landing doesn't know, you know, he's like,
you know what the hell they're there for, right? Yeah.
What you kick the door in? Like, you know, there's no warrant, no Fourth Amendment, nothing.
Right. This is why this is a manifestation of what we're talking about.
So exactly. They charged him with, like, so they found some things, right?
Of course, right.
Oh,
and because he tussled, so one officer almost fell out a window. And this guy grabbed the officer and pulled him back in, actually saved the officer. But they called that an assault on the police. He should have just let the guy. But at any rate, they charged this guy. And his attorney, who's a former state trooper and a police officer himself, said this is the most outrageous thing he's ever seen.
It is horrible.
He tried to get the body cam video. They said, well, because we dropped the charges, we erased all the body cam video.
Oh, my goodness.
So they dismissed all the charges.
I don't know if that's a crime, but that's public record. You can't do that. I'm sure there's protocol that they can't do. So look,
unreal or what?
Brett, this story couldn't have come any better timing on the heels of your question, because this is what happens. You would say, how does it manifest itself that you give the government permission to do certain things? They drive an effing truck through it. So it is not true that this, look, I don't know for sure whether this girl still had property rights to enter. But just because she did, you don't get to slam in the door and allow the police to come in.
It would be interesting to know if the girl knew one of the Elyria police that axe to grind.
Funny you should bring that up. I had a case at a college. I'm not going to mention which one, but it was a college. It was a private university here in Ohio. And my client was accused of, I can't remember what he was accused of. Oh, assaulting a girl. Okay. Right. It might have even been like a misdemeanor type sex offense. And we got our investigator involved and we looked into it, and it was total BS, total BS. And it was right in the advent of social media. Facebook, MySpace was still around. I don't know if Twitter or whatever, but it was in the middle of social media, and we start flipping somebody, my law clerk at the time, younger kid, turned out to be a good lawyer, works for the state now in the medical board. He found social media accounts of the officer and or of the girl. And there's the girl and the officer in about a half a dozen pictures with his arm around her. They're at a college party. You know, they're sort of hanging out together. Yeah. And he'd gotten a little too friendly with the girl, and he was the complaining witness who filed the complaint against my client. Of course, the case got dismissed. But it shows you. It's Norm's point and your point. Mm-hmm. These are humans. I'm not saying he's a bad man. I'm saying he's human, and he is subject to the same laws that the rest of us are, the same temptations. I just heard a sermon on the temptations of Christ, right? And they're like, if you take those metaphorically, right, it's like we all have these things. Yeah. And the one who was able to resist, of course, was Christ. But we can't always, you know, we all succumb to temptations.
May I prescribe a movie for you?
Sure.
If you haven't seen it, have you seen The Last Temptation of Christ by Martin Scorsese?
Yes.
Terribly misinterpreted movie.
Of course.
But it is a what-if movie. Like, what if Jesus had said, you know what?
I'm really hungry.
I don't want to be crucified.
Right.
I'm going to decline this from the Father, and I'm going to go have a family, have kids, enjoy, you know, the comforts of, if you will, middle-class life back then, whatever. But people were so offended because here's Jesus having sex, having a wife, having a family. And they're like, no, don't you get it? That was the temptation of the devil.
Right.
And the movie is revealing to you what would have...
Where that goes, right?
It can go.
But then at the end, you see him on the cross, like he did not succumb to that temptation. But it shows you really what a huge sacrifice when you think of, you know, how his mind must have been troubled.
Well, and think, you know, the temptations always come when we're at our weakest.
Yes.
You know, even
so,
Christ,
he's out in the desert,
in
no
the desert,
water,
no water,
food.
Starved.
Right.
You know,
and the serpent is saying, "Hey, dude,
come on,
come on,
you can do it."
Yeah,
yeah.
Come
we
on.
Can do it together. We
no,
can do it together.
You, don't right. you dare do it.
So oh, go ahead.
But it's a, you know, I don't know how we got into the temptation things, but,
well, but
it's like,
because he was man and God.
Yeah, but what led us to that in this discussion? I can't remember. But anyway, it's
well, we're all tempted with those,
oh,
those moments.
So if you think that the police officers are not going to succumb to temptation to like their compass is somehow always true north.
Right.
You're wrong.
Right.
You're just effing wrong. And anybody who was out supporting the BLM riots was saying just that. Right. We can't have these horrible police officers. Yet now, you know, they're okay somehow when cops are knocking on doors to go in and take your guns.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's the same. It's like it's free speech. It has to, it has to apply uniformly.
Point out, by the way, just to go back for a second, the ACLU did come out against that House.
Oh,
bill.
Good.
Yeah.
Finally.
So it's
nice. Now, if they were going in there to find guns or to find
right.
You know, the ACLU would have taken a different viewpoint.
Sure,
yeah.
Sure.
They've become content based.
So a little fun story.
Yeah.
Even
and
though
it ended up.
This doesn't quite fit in, but hey. So Cedar Point has debuted a ride, a new ride called Top Thrill 2. Yep. It's the tallest and fastest roller coaster in the world. It launches. So you launch at 74 miles an hour. It hits a top speed of 120. Yesterday, my race car was doing 150. 120 is a lot when you don't have a helmet on. And you're just out exposed in the air. It's 420 feet high, which if one story of a building is roughly 10 feet, 42-story building? You have got to be shitting
Look,
me.
The Top Thrill is at the Top Thrill Race or whatever that is. So that ride, the original version of that, caused somebody's death. I think somebody was injured, and they had to close it down.
Yeah.
And then obviously they've rebuilt it hopefully bigger and better and safer. But here's what's interesting about Ohio. Ohio makes it big again. We're like the roller coaster capital of the world.
Yes, they come from all over.
They come from, I've been up there at Cedar Point before. I took my kids when they were younger, and there were kids who made an annual pilgrimage, like this group of teens. They were like mid, late 20s at that time. But since they're teens, they've been coming in to experience the Cedar Point roller coasters.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and down in Cincinnati, we have Kings Island, which had the Beast and had the Son of Beast, which they've shut down. But it's
that,
like
that was a nasty ride.
Son
of Beast was bad.
It really beat you up.
Oh man, yeah.
So do you guys ride roller coasters?
My wife got me into it. I love Kings Island now. Now Cedar Point's got rides that are just too rough on me.
Okay.
But we did go 1 year. That Top Thrill you're talking about, we saw it in
and
action.
You got on
I did not ride that.
I
thing.
Did ride the original.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
But so I saw on there. But you're in there and you're ready to shoot out. And there's this clicking that goes on.
Yeah.
That kind of if you hear the rhythm, you know when you're going to get shot out. So my daughter and I are watching because I was not going to ride this thing. I don't know if Hayden and Angie did either. But anyway, it doesn't matter. But we're watching this, and there's older-ish couple get on. Okay. And they're just laughing nervously. And they're not hearing the clicking. And they're bending down laughing when the thing shoots out.
Oh, my God.
And I don't think they got injured or anything like that, but I told Madeline at the time, I was like, oh, they're going to be hurting. Because if you're down here and you're getting shot out at 70,
oh yeah,
you're
just you know. I guess I'm more of a. I want to hear click. I want to know how when things, especially when you're going to shoot out that fast.
Oh, yeah.
But it's a weird look of going straight up and then up curving back down to just because it's maybe 7 seconds.
It's a
total.
Very quick ride. It's
quick
almost
ride.
Not worth the wait.
Almost, yeah.
But you know, roller coaster. I can't ride them anymore. So somewhere along the way, if I ride a roller coaster now, I have a terrible headache all day long.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's like some sort of internal.
I'm getting there. There are certain rides. The day that I can't ride the Beast will be a sad day.
The Beast doesn't do that to me, though.
Me either. I could ride the Beast all day long.
I
love that ride.
I don't do roller coasters. And
this is a race car driver.
Yeah. You'll find this guy. So I ride motorcycles and I race.
Right. Yeah.
But my problem is I cannot give up the control.
So if
I was the guy in the lead car and I had a throttle and a brake, like I would do it. But so I'm a terrible backseat driver. I cannot be in a vehicle driven to except an airplane, I guess, because that's how
that's
you,
true. Yeah,
but
yeah.
I can't be in a vehicle well, that's going fast.
You at least
fast.
Can't see it in the airplane. You're more
yeah,
like
you're
in
there.
You're
yeah,
in a cigar.
That's right. Because yeah. the best piece.
Well,
the
you order a drink and you kind
yeah,
of.
Yeah, for us at least, the beast is you ride it after the park is quote unquote officially closed. After the fireworks, you're in line for the beast. And it's so one of
you get
a couple
the last
of
ride, yeah.
Get the last ride, and you're oh my god, riding the beast in the dark.
That's awesome.
It's amazing because you're hitting these cold pockets of air. It's all in the dark.
Oh,
you, there's no perspective.
Wow.
There's no perspective of where you
it's
are.
Just
you
the kind, rush.
It's
right,
just
I'm
the
going
rush.
This year. We're going. We're gonna
after,
do Common Sense Ohio.
After dark, do the last ride. Get in line before the fireworks and ride it. Oh my, it's totally different. I'm surprised they don't sell T-shirts. About riding the beast after the park
awesome.
Closes. It's great.
Well, look, we probably got to wrap. You got one more. Yeah. We got to wrap it up.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of sad, you know, kind of stories that, and I'll tell you what, I'll pass on those and just talk about some election stuff. So, Ohio Secretary of State Frank LaRose has come out with a program. He's having election boards in all the counties do four things. To rid inactive people off the rolls. And there's four things. One is where there's, I mean, this seems so obvious, but after 4 years of consecutive inactivity due to either change of address, you know, like cards mm-hmm. filed with the post office, past due invoices that go unresponded and non-deliverable is another clue that there's that person's not there anymore. Mm-hmm. Returned as undeliverable mail from the Secretary of State or an elections board where they send out a confirmation card and it comes back, we can't deliver this to Mrs. Smith because of whatever. We can't deliver it. And then BMV, Bureau of Motor Vehicle, mismatches between a current address and a previous address. So that all seems like pretty reasonable stuff, but of course he's being accused of...
It's hard to believe that's even...
And all those had to be...
That's controversy.
All those had to be checked off?
Or those are four things that he's asking the boards to check on.
Okay,
because
gotcha.
He says they have an ongoing...
Not just one triggers it, basically all four.
No, any of those.
Any of those?
It can trigger an investigation. And then what happens is if you are taken off the rolls before that is permanent... Mm-hmm. It is actually published on his website, you know, Mrs. Smith, formerly at blah, blah. This is a way for organizations or the person themselves to, you know, or a political party to look for, is she still there or not?
If it's published that way.
And then if no evidence is presented,
makes sense.
Then they're removed from the rolls.
Yeah. Okay.
But
well,
then somehow that's considered.
Of course.
You know, right. It's you're. Tilting the election or you're stealing the election or whatever.
As long as that name is published somewhere to check, any party can look, anybody can look. I mean, I think that's legit.
Yes. It's publicly published.
These are obvious things to me. And, you know, you might even say, isn't this incrementalism on the other side? It's like, there's a difference here. These are just basic standards. So the standard is you can't buy a gun if you have a felony. So checking to see if somebody has a felony before you buy a gun makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
If you're a dealer, now, like you can't vote twice.
Well,
so making sure people don't vote twice seems like it's pretty fair.
In the Constitution of Ohio and in the legislation governing elections, the county boards and the Secretary of State, they have a duty to make sure the voter rolls are accurate.
This is a government function.
This is a function. This is what they're supposed to do.
This is not a huge intrusion as far as I can tell.
Lastly, guys, the feds did agree that Ohio's 11 counties that were hit by tornadoes and high winds are now federal disaster areas.
Yeah, don't get me started on federal money for that stuff.
Loans and stuff for people that don't have insurance.
Yep. So the rest of us pay more.
yes, we do.
Right. All right. Well, with that, we're going to wrap it up. This has been another riveting hour or so of Common Sense Ohio, where you can check us out at commonsenseohioshow.com, brought to you week in and week out by Harper Plus Accounting. Lots of stuff going on. You can now, we've got videos, we've got reels, we got clips, I don't know, whatever, shorts. We got that stuff everywhere. I don't know where, but it's everywhere. Ubiquitous, if you want a nice big word. So you can check us out. I know Norm's got his blog and I see his Facebook posts, and he's if you want to engage him, all you got to do is dare him, and then he'll... He'll pounce like a panther on the keyboard.
Let's talk. Right.
Yeah. So coming at you right from the middle each and every week, at least until now.